great deacon, Israel Abel Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, everyone.
Shabbat shalom.
You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. The title of my sermon today is What the World Calls Right. Now, a lot of these things that the world calls right, Yahweh tells us, do not partake of them. If you'll turn over in your books of Yahweh to Isaiah 65, that's on page 570, and verse 4. And it says, who assemble and spend the night keeping memorials for the dead, who eat swine's flesh and the broth of abominable things, unclean foods, is in their vessels. Now, this is talking about Halloween, but as Pastor brought out to us, that the broth there is drugs. And the side note says, drugs to cure, but also to weaken. And now, some of these states are legalizing drugs, or the use of these drugs that were once illegal. Now, the first day that they... My first article here, it's... Ten things to know about nation's first recreational marijuana shops in Colorado. And it says, Colorado began allowing the sale of recreational marijuana on January 1st to anyone age 21 or older. Residents can now buy marijuana like alcohol, except the cannabis purchase is limited to an ounce, which is substantial enough to cost about $200 or more. It's a big moment. Colorado became the first state in the nation to open recreational pot stores and became the first place in the world where marijuana will be regulated from seed to sale. Pot, by the way, is the third most popular recreational drug in America after alcohol and tobacco, according to the Marijuana Reform Group, NORML. Now, the first day that they opened it for sale, the very first day, they made $1 million in merchandise, and that was in 24 pot shops. So they're legalizing these drugs so that they can get their money. 1 ounce of marijuana is $200. Cocaine, 1 gram of cocaine is $70 to $120. Now, these same drugs that they are legalizing are killing more people than cars, and it's also killing more people than guns. My second article, it says, America, it's time for an intervention. Drug overdoses are killing more people than cars and guns. It says, in 60% of all overdose deaths, prescription pharmaceuticals were to blame. These shocking statistics have led policymakers at both the federal and state levels to refocus their efforts on addressing this abuse. So actually, prescription pharmaceuticals that they prescribe to people to take. It says, according to the latest available data from the Centers for Disease Control, drug overdoses were responsible for 38,329 deaths in 2010, 30,006 of which were unintentional. That's a rate of 105 every day, 105 overdoses every day. And that number doesn't take into account the 6,748 people treated every day for the misuse of drugs. So 105 people a day is what that article says. And it doesn't take into account the over 6,000 that are treated for the misuse of drugs every day. It also said that 60% of those overdose deaths are from prescription pharmaceuticals, so things they were prescribed to take. In this article, it says, drug overdose has now overtaken automobile crashes as the leading cause of accidental death in the United States, according to an analysis of government data. This is the first time that drugs have killed more people than car wrecks since the government began tracking drug-related fatalities in 1979. The increase in drug deaths can be ascribed largely to a surge in overdose involving prescription painkillers. According to a separate analysis, that same increase in prescription drug use by adults may also be fueling a related trend in children under 5, so under 5 years of age. From 2001 to 2008, accidental drug poisonings of young children increased 22%, and the heading of that article was fueled by growing painkiller use, overdose deaths, and child poisonings are on the rise. And a child poisoning is where a young child gets hold of a legal or illegal drug. And then the second page of this article, it says, but greater availability of these medications has side effects, not only in the increase in overdose deaths by adults, but also in accidental, what they call accidental poisonings of children. A recent study on child poisoning examined data on 544,133 children aged 5 years old or younger who had been taken to the emergency room between 2001 and 2008 for swallowing drugs. In 95% of cases, the children had taken the drugs themselves. More than half of the cases involved prescription drugs rather than over-the-counter medications, and most serious problems were associated with prescription opioids, sedatives, and heart medications. Poisonings among children in this age group increased by 22% during the period studied. So the leaders are legalizing these drugs that are even killing more people than cars and even guns and even getting to children 5 years old or younger and killing them also. But they're doing it because they want their money. Now, an article here. No. Most of these deaths, they're actually from prescription painkillers, as the previous article said. So they're legalizing these drugs that are killing more people than cars and guns, killing children under 5 years in age, so that they can get their money. Now, because people before, they were doing it between themselves and the government wasn't getting the tax money off of it, but now they have to buy it from stores that are set up by the government and by the state so that they can get their money from it. And they say, yeah, these will help your heartache and the other pains throughout your body. They say it because, and it's also killing 105 people a day in the United States alone. People are taking these drugs, some to get away from reality get away from something that they don't want to deal with. So they take these drugs to get out of depression or whatever it is. Now, some others do it to be cool or to be part of the in crowd. The next article is from a book called The Mind, and it was in a prophetic word. It says here, all too often, the risks, whether the anguish of the withdrawal syndrome or a drug's harmful or even potentially fatal consequences, do not matter to the addict. So they use them for the pleasure that they arise to get out of reality. And some of them, in this article previously, I didn't read it, but it said that some of them take it to the point that their body actually depends on the use of these drugs. And then it said there that the addict or the person using them, they don't let the thoughts about the consequences or the after effects of these drugs, they don't let it bother them. They don't even worry about their health. So legalizing these drugs that are killing more people than cars and guns, legalizing these substances is true love, right? No, it isn't. If you'll turn over in your books of Yahweh to 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 10, and that's on page 936. And it says, for the love of money is a root of all evil, and there are some who, pursuing it, have strayed from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. The love of money, they want their money, so they legalize these drugs, and what do they end up doing? They murder people. If you'll turn over to Matithia 24. Matithia 24 and verse 12. And that's found on page 752. And it says, "And because iniquity, the breaking of Yahweh's law will abound, the love of the many will grow cold." The love of the many will grow cold. And we can see this clearly in the world today. The only true love is offered here in the house of Yahweh. That's the only place where you're going to find true love. Yes, praise Yahweh. Now, true love is, the week pastor was talking about the two heroin overdoses that occurred. He said, "Don't let these drugs into your body, my friends." That is true love, teaching us the right way to do. That's what you get here at the house of Yahweh. You're taught the right way to go. Now, one last excerpt from the first article that I read. It says here, in the last page, it says, they have to be, it's talking about these rules on the marijuana. It says, they just have to be great enough to keep the feds away, great enough to keep marijuana stakeholders joyful, great enough to keep Coloradans from worrying they've made a horrible mistake. So they're trying to keep these people from thinking that they've made a mistake, and they keep the people from thinking this. They make them think they're doing the right thing by taking these drugs, but they're actually hurting their body, hurting their mind. They're damaging their body. They're destroying their minds. So remember, we don't smoke marijuana enabling, nor do we take our trips on LSD. And with that, if you'll all please stand, I have the great honor and privilege to present to you the great Deacon Michael Ossoff Hawkins.
Shabbat Shalom. You all may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Sabbath day, showing true love to each other by serving one another. But we had another sign from heaven, and this one's a little bit different than the other ones. It's animated. So I'm going to get right into the numbers that came from the video and the pictures, and I'm going to play the video. But there's a tree at the front gate, and there's a light there, and it shines a certain way. And when it hits the light, there's Pastor's face. And I wasn't going to, I walked by, and I'm like, I'll get a picture. And I'm like, the thing's moving. You can see his mouth moving and his hand coming up, and Pastor's preaching. So I went ahead and videotaped it, and it's unlike anything you've seen. So the video number was number 263, and it means declaring. Isaiah 46:10 is declaring the end from the beginning. Some of the pictures that I got was 1812, which comes from 1811, and it means to pour out. Okay, and picture number two, there was two numbers with it, 505 and 1220. 505 means a family or sent. 1220 means gold one or gold. And the pictures were taken on 5/5/2014 at 12:58 a.m. 55 means sincerely, purely. 2014 means relief. And hopefully we get some this year. 12:58 means to shower hail. And we'll deal with the scripture after I show the video, Isaiah 32. So at this time, would you please play the video? Now watch carefully. This is the picture of the tree that Pastor's face was seen in. The very tip of the branch. And that's where it was seen right there. Well, the video at the beginning is a little jerky, but it stabilizes. Okay, if you look on the right there, you see his head, and he's looking to the left. Now if you watch carefully, you'll see his mouth start moving, and you'll see his hand come up. He's preaching to people as they're driving out. Now the wind will blow it a little bit, and it goes a little out of shape because it's leaves, but Yahweh animated it. You can actually see him preaching in the sign from heaven that Yahshua sent. He'll move more. He gets really kind of into teaching the law here a couple times. He really sticks his head out. I mean, when we saw this, we laughed. We're like, Yahweh actually animated it. Okay, now there's one last thing that I caught here.
You can't make it without this Okie. You can't make it without this Okie.
Praise Yahweh. Okay, if you'll all turn over to Isaiah 32, it's found on page 549. It's Isaiah 32. Showing true love to each other by serving one another. And we're going to look at verse 18 of Isaiah 32. My people will dwell in a peaceful habitation, we know as the house, in a sure, secure, or protected dwellings, in sure, protected dwellings, and in quiet, resting places. Though hail comes down on the forest, and the city is brought low, utterly abased, in low places, blessed are you, Yisrael Hawkins, who sows peace beside all waters, who can safely send forth the feet of the buffalo, or ox, and the donkey to range freely. The rain came down the other night and it hailed and the branch is gone. But we did get it on video and we have it for everybody to see. Now, if you weren't able to see it, we'll make it available for you to see it. And that's pretty much it. You all have a wonderful Sabbath. If you'll all please stand. Praise Yahweh for you all. And at this time, I have the great honor and privilege to turn over to one of the great teachers and singers of the law, the great Deacon David Obadiah Hawkins.
Shabbat Shalom, saints of Yahweh. Please be seated. That is amazing. That was a great video. That was really awesome. I want you to be thinking about something while I start this off. I want you to think about who are you? Who are you? Think about that while you're turning to page 964. Page 964, that's 1st Yochanan. And chapter 2. 1st Yochanan, chapter 2, verse 1. My little children, I write these things to you so that you may not sin. Remember, sin never again. So that we may not sin, these things are written for us. Look at verse 3. Now, by this we do know that we know him if we keep his laws. Now, I know a lot of people say they keep the laws. And in many different ways, but you have to remember, if we fail in one point, then we're not keeping the laws. He who says, I know him, but does not keep his law, is a liar, and the truth is not in him. Whoever keeps his law, in him truly is the love of Yahweh perfected, and by this we know that we are in him. He who says he abides in him is himself also obligated to walk exactly as he walked. And look at that right there in the side notes. It says, agree to walk. Side note F, agree to walk. And that agree, it's to come into or be in accord. It is to conform or to harmonize, being in unity. Let's look over on the other page, or on the same page, actually, on down just a little bit. On verse 9, it says, he who says he is in the light, yet hates his neighbor, is in darkness until now. And I want you to look at that word hate. We're going to focus on it for just a minute, because you need to know the depth of what this is. But he who loves his neighbor abides in the light, and there is no occasion for stumbling in him. Verse 11 says, he who hates his neighbor is in darkness and walks in darkness and does not know where he is going because that darkness has blinded his eyes. So if you hate your neighbor, your eyes are blinded and you don't know where you're going. You've gone backwards. You have gone backwards in time and backwards in the laws of Yahweh. That word hate, I looked that up in the American Heritage, and it means to persecute, to annoy persistently, or to bother. I want you to think about the last time you were bothering somebody on a persistent basis. Annoy is another word there. It says, cause slight irritation to another by troublesome acts or repeated acts. Annoy. Cause slight irritation. That's slight irritation. Get that? To another by troublesome, often repeated acts. That's very important to remember. That word hate, and remembering how deep that is. It says, he who hates his neighbor, back to verse 11, is in darkness and walks in darkness and does not know where he is going. So he who annoys and bothers his brother persistently, causing slight irritation and other troublesome acts, you need to be aware of what you're doing. The word harm was another word that included in that, and it means physical or psychological injury. Remember, psychological injury. And then it made me think of harmless. Harmless is not causing or incapable of causing harm, not intended to harm or offend in any way. And remember, there's a verse, I don't have it written down, but that talks about if you offend one of these little ones, it would be better if you had a millstone tied around your neck and dropped in the deepest parts of the ocean, right? But this is to show you, continuing back on this, this is to show you how this hate, you can hate your neighbor, your friend, your classmate, a relative. And remember, back in 1 Yochanan, those side notes in verse 11 that persecuted, this hate is also persecuted with silly questions. I mean, it goes pretty deep. It could keep you busy for a little while. Persecuted by silly questions. Exhibiting, that silly means exhibiting a lack of wisdom or of great sense. Or foolish. Or lacking seriousness. Persecuted by silly questions. That's another way that you hate your neighbor. Wrong, torment, harass, or vex. Torment is great physical or mental anguish. Pain, to agitate or upset greatly. In 1 Yochanan 3, 4, if you'll turn the page there. It's on the next page, 965. 1 Yochanan 3, 4 says, whoever commits sin transgresses also the law, for sin is transgression of the law. And verse 10 says, in this the children of Yahweh and the children of the devil are manifest. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of Yahweh, and he does not love his neighbor. So he actually hates his neighbor. For this is the message that you heard from the beginning, that we should love one another. Not as Cain, who was of that wicked one and murdered his brother. Through the continual annoyances, the continual harassing, the continual torment, and finally murdered his brother. And why did he murder his brother? Because his brother's works, because his works were evil and his brother's works were righteous. Remember the annoyance, the torments, the picking at. How did Yahshua walk though? That's the way that we must walk. We have to walk the way that Yahshua walked. And Verse 15 says, whoever hates his neighbor is a murderer, and you know that no murderer has eternal life abiding in him. And in verse 16, by this we know love, because he laid down his life for us, so we also ought to lay down our lives for our brothers. And that's the way that Yahshua walked. We lay down our lives by putting our brothers' needs first, by being obedient to authority. Whether you think it's the right way or not the right way. You know, the desired result of a situation is obedience. I'm just going to talk about this obedience just for a moment. You know, in the Peaceful Solution Character Education Program, It helps you to deal with setbacks, and setbacks could be perceived setbacks, in fact, because you have your plan, you have everything set in a certain way that you want it and you expect it to be, and you feel that it is so right and it's the only way to do it, and then the authority says something different. Maybe a very small thing that they just have you do it just slightly different, and it may interfere with your goal of, you know, whatever it is for the day that you have. But we have to remember to prioritize. We have to prioritize, and we have to remember our main goal is to make it into the kingdom of Yahweh. And the way we're going to do that is by remaining obedient to authority. You're never going to have the power that Yahweh wants to give us by not being obedient, by bucking up against the authority. But in the peaceful solution, in Building Moral Excellence on page 133, it says, dealing with setbacks. Learning how to effectively deal with setbacks requires self-control and discipline. Rather than reacting impulsively to the disappointment and frustration of a setback, consider your options and the realistic steps that you could take to solve a problem. Not the ones that you're making up in your mind that don't fit your goal for the day, but realistic steps that you could take to solve the problem. So that's what we want to do. We want to remember that the authority is going to give us realistic steps to handle the problem, whatever it may be. And you have to be real careful, because if you don't listen to the authority and you buck up against the authority, you could be murmuring. You start murmuring. And when you do that, you're not murmuring against the person standing in front of you, that authority that's telling you to do it a certain way. You're murmuring against Yahweh. And if you're murmuring against Yahweh, you won't be in the kingdom. Yahweh says, you know, don't fear. Don't fear. He's going to test and prove us to see if we're fit for the kingdom, to see if we will be obedient or not, to see if we will keep his laws, to see if we will obey the one sent. It's the trial of our faith. And you know, even though it's that very strong desire within us that we want to do that thing that we want to do, you know, go our own way and do it, and it just seems so right in every way, when the authority tells you to do something, you need to stop. And we all know how this works, right? You need to stop. Let the emotions calm down a moment. Think about what you should do, which of course it's obedience. 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 And then proceed with the right choice. Okay, well, back to who are you. Do you like to pick at others? Anybody here like to pick at people? Joshing, just funning around. I looked up that word fun. It's a source of amusement, of being playful, often noisy. Turn to page 972, please. Revelation 2:15 on page 972. And you could read that whole chapter, but just real quick. Chapter 15 on page 972, verse 15 on page 972 says, "So you also have those who hold the doctrine of the Nicolaitans, which thing I hate." That's been a long time since we've heard about the Nicolaitans, which thing Yahweh hates. And I have a note there from a sermon from back then, I forget what year it was in, but it says, urging others to play rather than to work. So if you're joshing around, funning around, picking at others, which is tormenting and harassing and annoying them, and you say, oh, I was just funning. Well, okay, you were just funning. You were being a Nicolaitan, which thing Yahweh hates. Urging others to play rather than to work. And the peaceful solution does not teach that you should play rather than work. It teaches you to do your job. And it teaches you how to love your neighbor as yourself. And that's one of the two most important laws. It's what the whole law hangs on. Love Yahweh with all your heart, soul, and might. And the second one is just like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. And the peaceful solution teaches us how to do this. So you pride yourself on some point of the law you're keeping. You pride yourself that, hey, I salt every sacrifice. Well, that's great. You're supposed to do that. But then you go and you pick at your brother and annoy him and make his life miserable to the point that he's despondent and depressed. Even to some points where out in the world you hear of it all the time, people committing suicide because they were tormented and bullied this way. So once again, I'm going to pose this question to you, and we'll be done here in just a moment, but who are you? Are you the one that is a Nickelodeon, playing, having fun, playing around? Do you say you know that Yahweh, but you don't keep His laws? Because if you do, the truth is not in you. Real quick, turn to 1 Kefa, page 959, and then this will be the last scripture. Page 959, 1 Kefa 3. This is the person you need to be. So who are you? Are you that Nickelodeon? Are you the liar? Or are you what we're fixing to read about? In verse 8 on page 959, it says, "Finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another, full of brotherly love, sympathetic and courteous towards one another, not repaying evil for evil, not reviling with reviling, but on the contrary, blessing your brother, knowing that you were called to this so you may inherit the blessing." Verse 11 says, "Let him turn away from evil and do righteousness. Let him seek peace and pursue it." And that's what we do when we let the Peaceful Solution Character Education Program take control of our lives. And with that, if you'll all please stand. Please consider this day, who are you? It's my great honor and privilege to present to you the great Kahan, Tobia Hawkins.
Hey, Joey. May all be seated. Okay. I'd like to ask you a question. So what is fear? Huh? Speaking out in public, doing things you're not used to. Well, here's the definition of fear. A distressful emotion aroused by imminent danger, evil, or pain, whether the threat of real or imagined. So the fear is that of evil. I'd like to talk about, David talked about it a little bit, about bullying. And how it's increased over the years and where we're at and what we need to do to fix the bullying problem. Because there's bullying everywhere. It's in the schools, if you go hold on one second. Here it is. There's different types. They have like 8 different types of bullying: cyberbullying, social bullying, verbal bullying, school bullying, text bullying, workplace bullying, bullying by parents, bullying, harassment, physical bullying, name calling, and female bullying. They have a lot of. I don't remember all those when I was growing up. If they even had those, I know they didn't have texting, so. But it's very. We need to work on ourselves, and by our example, we'll change other people by how we conduct ourselves. If y'all turn over to Deuteronomy, and I want you to remember Deuteronomy 7. It's on page 153. And it says, if you should ever start thinking of yourself, these nations are stronger than you are, how can you drive them out? You must then remember that what Yahweh your father did to Pharaoh and to all Egypt. Then you will not be afraid of them. It says, you saw with your own eyes the great trials, the signs, the wonders, the mighty hand, and the outstretched arms with which Yahweh your Father brought you out. Yahweh your Father will also do all these things to the people Yahweh your Father will also do all these things to the people you may have fear of. And the signs of the wonder, like digging, Mike also brought out the thing at the front gates with Pastor, talking to the people that are leaving. In verse 21, You must have no fear of them, for Yahweh your Father, who is among you, is a great and awesome power. Is he among you? Are you keeping his laws like the great deacon David Knight was saying? Are you doing what you were supposed to be doing? Is Father Yahweh with you? Are we doing everything that we need to be doing? Is the question. It's very important that we take this seriously, because our example by our actions out in the world is what's going to change, and also this peaceful solution that we are promoting. Okay? Because we need positive influences around us all the time, either by others or ourselves. By ourselves, I'm talking about having that I can do attitude. I can do it. How many people are scared of heights? That's it? Come on. A little bit? Okay. Some people more so than others. But look at it like that. I mean, if you're scared of a 6-foot ladder, you know, if you climb those steps, if you put the effort in and take those steps, each and every step, you can get a little bit higher each time. Okay? And it talks about it in the Moral Excellence book. It's on page 59. It says, a positive influence will motivate you to make right choices and decisions that will build your positive character. And that's what we need, is positive character. A positive influence will not conflict with a moral choice. So we need to have moral or positive influences so we'll make those right choices. And on page 96 in the Building Moral Excellence book, it says, and this is part of the taking the steps in the ladder, is what does it mean to maintain a positive character? To maintain anything is to keep it in great working condition. It's like your wardrobe. Making sure that your clothes are washed, making sure your suit's ironed, your tally, everything's in order, or your car. If you maintaining a car, make sure it has gas in it and oil, because you know those things are very important to that car for you to get from place to place. The concept of maintaining also applies to your character. Maintaining a positive character means that you must constantly make moral decisions using positive character traits. Constantly considering is an important part of your character's maintenance. It shows that you can be relied on to always, says always, regarding of the situation, make positive moral choices. So being able to restrain negative influences today, but failing for them the next day, is not maintaining a positive character. So it's walking that ladder, making sure that we're going forward every time, and we're examining ourselves, and making that right choice. Here's four guidelines to maintaining positive moral character. It says, constantly practicing self-control. You know, examining, making sure that you're, you know, showing love and concern to your brother. Okay. Periodically evaluating your choices to determine your character. You know, taking a look at yourself. Did I handle that situation right with my brother? Disciplining yourself and being determined to make the right choices. Recognizing that there is a purpose for your life and set positive, achievable goals. And that's a big thing that you see in suicides with bullying, that the people, they don't think they have a purpose in life. And we need to recognize that also. If you read over this, you can see the steps for bullying and suicide. So with that, I'll turn it over to the Great Cons Fund.
Shabbat Shalom, everyone. You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. If you would, if you have your scriptures with you today, please turn over to Luke chapter 22. I'm going to start off by reading a small portion out of the acceptance book of the Peaceful Solution. While you're turning over to Luke 22, and then we're going to look at the example of our high priest, Yeshua Messiah. You know, hearing pastor's sermon playing all week long about the peace being taken from the world. The world has no peace. The peace that we have, the world does not have. And I want to look at the difference there and what we're taught in the house of Yahweh and how this has been such a blessing and a benefit to our lives, maybe more so than we even realize. On page 87 of the acceptance book, there's a quote up top. It says, "Potential in our youth without moral direction and purpose." Now remember, the great Kahan before me was speaking about having purpose. "Potential in our youth without moral direction and purpose is much like a derailed train." You know, you think of a train, there's a lot of energy there. There's a lot of potential. And our youth have that same energy, that same potential. We look at them as the leaders of tomorrow. But if they don't have that moral guidance and direction, which those tracks provide, they can easily be derailed. So it says there is a purpose to it all. Now, to have purpose in life means to have a positive direction in which to grow and mature. Knowing your purpose helps you to know what you want to do with your life. And of course, when we come to the house of Yahweh, we have that purpose. Matthias 6:33 says, "Seek first the kingdom of Yahweh." We see that in the speech, "Speak with Purpose." The very first thing it talks about is looking at that purpose of making it in Yahweh's kingdom. Well, how can you tell if there is person in someone's life? You can see the determination. You can see the motivation that they have to accomplish things. People with purpose, they strive to learn all they can about a particular subject so they can know best how to proceed. This requires education, not just in a classroom, but also in real life situations. And here's the putting into practice what we learn in the house of Yahweh. It is up to you to determine your purpose and to make choices that will help you succeed in achieving this purpose. And yes, our ultimate purpose, the number one focus that we have is seeking first the kingdom of Yahweh. We may have jobs that also have different purposes, but it should all lead us back to seeking first the kingdom. And the world, keep in mind that the world, they don't have this. They have no guidance. Unless you understand that your life has purpose, you can easily dismiss the effect that you have on the lives of others. So here you start to see the other side of the coin. Without an appreciation of just how significant you are to your family and friends, you may begin to feel as if your life has no direction or value. And think about what we learned about the high rate of suicides that are taking place every day now. Those are people that feel their life has no value. Those are people that don't realize how much other people, how they can help other people. Never think of your life as meaningless, unimportant, or useless. Everyone has something to offer and contribute to the lives of their family, friends, and society as whole. You can do whatever you set your mind to do. You know, and this is what we tell the children that we speak to, that everyone has this great potential to be a benefit to society. And everyone should have this great purpose. But as we talk about this purpose, there's something that helps us develop this attitude. And we're going to see it right here on the next page. In this lesson, you will explore that there is value and purpose in life. Standing on the firm foundation of your purpose demonstrates that you accept your life as worthwhile and meaningful. And I want to show you this right here because this is what the Peaceful Solution goes into. You can all see that? You can see that? Helping others equals value and worth. Helping others. Now, this was the attitude that Yeshua, that made Yeshua stand out so much above everyone else. Remember how pastors taught us about his attitude was always on getting the work done. It was always on other people, making sure they're taken care of. And this is what he taught those with him. If you're at Luke chapter 22, look at verse 24. Now, there also developed a controversy among them. So you see right away there was a little bit of a problem here. There wasn't this attitude of servitude. They had a little bit of a controversy. Somebody wasn't putting someone else first. They weren't having this attitude to serve someone else. About which of them should be accounted as the greatest, or accounted the greatest. So he said to them, "The kings of the Gentiles exercise rulership over them, and those who exercise authority over them are called benefactors. But this must not be so among you. For he who is greatest among you, let him be as the youngest, and he who is first, like the one who serves." So there he's putting that attitude. He's teaching this great attitude of servitude that we've heard so much of in the house of Yahweh lately. And we're going to see now that the world, you know, after all this time of rejecting Yahweh, they're finally getting to the point where they realize that, hey, you know what? There's a lot of benefits in serving someone else. There's a lot of benefits in doing what our Savior said, in helping others, putting others before you. "For who is greater, he who sits at the table or he who serves? Is it not he who sits at the table? But I am among you as he who serves." All right, now let's look at Acts chapter 20. Acts chapter 20, because this attitude carried on. I'm sorry, I think it's Acts chapter, no, it is Acts 20. Acts chapter 20, verse 35. Acts 20, verse 35. And remember, it says helping others. Okay, we're going to see how in helping others, we actually help ourselves. And that's what the world has failed to realize, that in helping others, we help ourselves. We are the ones that receive the blessing. Not that we're looking for that blessing because we're serving someone else, but the blessing comes back around. Acts chapter 20, verse 35. "I have showed you all things how, so that laboring, you ought to support the weak and to remember the words of Yeshua Messiah, how he said, 'It is more blessed to give than to receive.'" More blessed to give than to receive. So I have an article here. This is from healthusnews.com. Now pay attention here to the article. It says, "With depression, helping others may in turn help you. Random acts of kindness can snowball into more positive mood overall, experts say." So the experts are now finally realizing that when we take an attitude of servitude, we put someone else ahead of us and serve them, it can help us have an overall positive attitude. "Doing something nice for someone else often leaves people feeling great about themselves and positive about their place in the world. But does that mean practicing random acts of kindness has scientifically proven therapeutic value in treating mood disorders like depression? Yes. According to a growing body of research that has found that positive activity interventions," okay, now don't let the big word throw you off there. All that is the attitude of servitude. You know, doing something for someone else. A positive activity interventions. Looking at your blessings. "Like helping someone with groceries, writing a thank you note, or even counting your blessings, can serve as an effective, low-cost treatment for depression." You know, and look at all the many opportunities we have in the house of Yahweh to serve someone else. Okay, and in doing so, praise Yahweh. That's right. We have great opportunities in the house of Yahweh to serve. The world doesn't have the Sabbath day. They don't have the day that would teach them to get their mind off themselves and put it on someone else, to be a true servant. So they're missing out on that, and the youth are missing out on that, and that's why their lives are not very, they have this downcast mood, and they're not upbeat. I mean, you see adults in very high positions that are jumping off buildings, businessmen, to where you think, what in the world is going on? But the peace is taken from them. They don't have the attitude. They don't have this attitude of servitude to where they would actually be receiving the blessing. Their mind is always on themselves. It's not on others. And that's why Yeshua was so great. He always had his mind on others. Remember the microorganisms, they loved that man. They loved what he was, how he was, what his character was. They loved him. That's why they wanted to obey him in everything that he commanded them. So it's the difference here that we in the house of Yahweh are learning from the world. After a rigorous review of research on the therapeutic benefits of positive emotion, now think of all the self-control and the building moral excellence that tell us, get rid of the negative. Push that out of your mind and think about something positive. Luberinsky said she and her colleagues found widespread support for the notion that people with a tendency toward depression can help themselves by helping others, or otherwise in introducing positivity into their day-to-day lives. Not only can being positive improve your mood, it can develop into a self-sustaining upward spiral. You're actually going up, just like in the house of Yahweh, we're only going up with that upward attitude, spiraling upward. Okay, another article here, it says, study finds, and this is from the University at Buffalo, New York, study finds it actually is better and healthier to give than to receive. So after all this time and effort and research and money, what they're proving now is what the scriptures say is correct. Those who help others derive significant health benefits not available to recipients. So you'd think it'd be the other way around, right? Someone's going to help you. You're the one that's going to receive the benefit because they helped you. Nope. It's the other way around. The one doing the help. The blessing comes back around to them. It's in the attitude. It's in the mood. It's how they feel. A five-year study, so it took 5 years here to what they could have gotten, probably an hour sermon from the house of Yahweh. A five-year study by researchers at three universities has established that providing assistance to others protects our health and lengthens our lives. This, after more than two decades of research, failed to establish the same benefits accrue to the recipient of such help. So it was only to the one doing the help, you know, that or the one giving the service there, providing the help. And not that we don't let people serve us. Don't take it the wrong way. But you know, the world has this attitude of, you know, people should serve me. You know, I'm the top here, so come and serve me. In the house of Yahweh, we learn directly opposite of that. Put others before you, and here's the proof. Not that we needed more proof than the scriptures, but the world now, it's just like prophecy being fulfilled. They see now, you know what? We should have accepted Yahweh acceptance. We should have accepted what Yahweh taught us. Now, as the title of our study indicates, we tested the hypothesis that providing help to others would predict a reduced association between stress and mortality for the helpers. And that's actually what they proved, that those who had that attitude of servitude were the ones that received the benefit. In conclusion, I'd like to turn over to, and there was several other studies proving the same thing, but I'd like you to turn over to Philippians. You turn over to Philippians chapter 2. And keeping in mind this great attitude of our high priest and the microorganisms, they absolutely love that man, and they wanted to listen to what he had to say. And this is what we're achieving ourselves as we perfect our character, as we let the teachings of the house of Yahweh affect our character. But as you're turning to Philippians chapter 2 on page 922, therefore, if there's any consolation in the Messiah, if any comfort and love, if any fellowship in the Spirit, if any affection and mercy, complete my joy by being like-minded. There we have to come into unity, having the same love, being united in one accord and of one mind. Let nothing be done by way of strife or empty glory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than themselves. Let every one of you not only look out for your own interests, but also for the interests of others. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Yeshua Messiah. May Yahweh greatly bless you. Great speaking with you on the Sabbath day. If you all please stand. It's now my honor to turn the services over to the great Kahan, Kenanya Hawkins.
Here's your Shabbat Shalom, saints of Yahweh. You may be seated. Now, you're going to think that, you know, the last few speakers, we all got together last night and, you know, exchanged notes and figured out who was going to bring what and which person was going to bring out this, but that really wasn't the case. That's just what we call the Spirit of Yahweh working together amongst the people, because we're all on the same page with these things, and it never ceases to amaze me how everything ties in to one another. I want to kind of speak, as I have before, to our young people. So, you know, older people, kind of close your ears a little bit, you know, put your earplugs in. Because I really want to focus on, not just focus on it, but I want you to really pay attention. Our youth, if you're from New York, our youths, you know. I want you to pay attention to what's being said, because it's very important, what not just what I'm going to be talking about, but what the previous speakers spoke about. And setting goals and having the attitude of servitude. And what we speak about is nothing new. It's not something we just thought of at the top of our minds. I mean, we've been receiving these teachings from the house of Yahweh, from the one sent, for years. And all we're doing is rehearsing and reiterating and repeating what we've been taught. And that's what we're learning here in the house of Yahweh. Learn what to teach, and then what? Right. And if we do that, we can't go wrong. We're showing Yahweh that we're going to trust in Him by speaking His words. Not our own words, but His words. Now, I have a question for you. And this ties into what the great Kohen Zephaniah just spoke about, and having certain things that you should have set in your mind. And it's a question. It says, a positive direction towards growth and maturity is what? Now, this is for the young people. A positive direction toward growth and maturity is what? What is that? What was that? I heard it.
Purpose.
That's right. It's purpose. Now, you can find that on Building Moral Excellence, page 130, chapter or step 4 of Maintaining a Positive Character. We have to have purpose in life. And in effect, we do have a purpose. And we don't have to, you know, necessarily figure out what our ultimate purpose is, because Yahweh has given us a purpose. And we have to just strive in our obedience, in our working, in our everyday interactions, our overcoming, in setting these little goals within our life to accomplish this purpose of becoming like Yahweh. Becoming like Yahweh. And something that I realize, and I know it's still an issue right now, because you know, I do interact and I speak with a lot of our young people, and I see what's taking place in the world as well. So I know that this is, you know, there are pulls, there are things that will easily draw your attention away from this purpose that Yahweh has given us to become in His image and in His likeness, so that we can be a part of this great generation, this last work, this last era, that is going to put an end to sin. Now, that's a powerful thing right there. Putting an end to sin, which means putting an end to war, putting an end to sickness, putting an end to poverty, putting an end to death. That's what we're established to do. That's what this house, this work, everybody sitting in here right now, that is what's set before each and every one of you to have that power to do. And in effect, you're going to bring life, peace, joy, and abundant living through the laws of Yahweh. Now, if that's not something you can get excited about, I don't know what else there is, because what are we going to have after mankind destroys himself? After he destroys, this system crumbles upon itself. After all the technology has proven to be futile in the hands of one who is uneducated in righteousness. The only thing that's going to be left standing after the dust clears is the house of Yahweh and the people who make up this house. Praise Yahweh. Now, before I get going here, you know, I want to dispel a few myths, because there are some myths that are continually floating around that are among our young people. And I know there's, you know, young that are watching from a distance and who may be inquiring about the house of Yahweh. But I want to dispel a few myths just to kind of set our minds aright. I've got to keep my mind, I am a time there. It's just 5 myths. There are many, but 5 of them I'm going to dispel here. Number 5 is, cell phones have not been around forever. All right? They have not been around forever. Now, I know you've seen the display that we had at the feast that kind of took us through the time, and that's a great display in showing the time period that mankind came through, from thousands of years of having a simple, basic way of life, and then just this last 100 years or so, how the technology has increased. Well, who told them technology was going to increase? You know, Yahweh told us that. Yahweh told us that in Daniel, that it was going to take place, but it was going to take place, in this last generation. Number four. I know people think the internet's been around for a long time, but the internet, despite its age, you know, which is only, what, about 20 years old or so, to the general public at least, the internet was not something that was used by the prophets to spy on their enemies. Okay? I know we're in the internet age where we can find out almost anything about anyone, okay, at any time. But the prophets, they used the laws of Yahweh in everything that they did. And they knew their enemies because their enemies were identified not necessarily by who they are or what tribe they were from or what culture that they grew up in, but it was by the life that they live. And keep that in mind. You know, an enemy, your brother of the house of Yahweh is not your enemy. You might have a little bit of annoyance from time to time, as the great Deacon David brought out, but that annoyance, it's not how that person annoys you, it's if they annoy you, but it's how you respond to it. That's what Yahweh is looking at. So we need to make sure, you know, we're responding positively and being an example to them, and make sure we're not doing our part to annoy others. Number three, our parents were not born parents. Yes, we were teens too, okay? Why is this important? Because when parents are there and teachers are there to give you instructions, understand they have been where you are, okay? They know what you're going through, and they don't want you to make the same mistakes. We don't want you, children, to make the same mistakes that we made. No, we didn't come out automatically parents. Number two, parents are not an endless supply of cash. Okay? You know, the house of Yahweh and Yahweh teaches that, yes, you must work for what you desire to have. And despite Yahweh being the father of everything, and Yahweh, you know, he is not in want or in need for anything, he still tells us that if we want to make it in this kingdom, we have to do the what? Work, right? Not play, but the work. And number one, keep this one in mind, you will not die without your cell phone. All right? So sometimes you need to put the cell phone down and pick the book of Yahweh up, because that, praise Yahweh, that seems to be the biggest distraction right now, not just among our young people, but among people in general. Take a ride through town any time of the day. Even people that are walking, I see reports all the time, people who are walking through town and they'll, you know, one lady, she fell off a pier, you know, because she was texting something on Facebook. Another lady, actually, seconds after she texted how happy she was, she ran off the side of a road and into a truck, you know, and ended her life. There's so many distractions that Satan has out there that, remember, Pastor said these things are to take our minds off of what Yahweh has set before us, to build our minds to become like him. And that's the goal that we should have set in front of us for this fulfilling our purpose. But just write for your notes, because I don't have time. Genesis chapter 1:26. You know, Yahweh shows there at the very beginning, and I know we all know that scripture and we know it by heart, that this is what he wants to do with mankind. Make us in his image and likeness. Make us to where we will have this governorship over the creeping things, the microorganisms, the birds of the air, the fish of the sea, and so forth. This is what he wants to do in making us like this. To get in this kingdom, you know, that's great. And as the great Khan said, you know, getting into this kingdom, you know, it's part of our goal, it's part of our purpose. But what are we going to do when we get there? You know, unless we have the laws of Yahweh and the plan of Yahweh in our heart to understand what Yahweh's training us for, then when we get there, we're just going to be looking at how pretty everything is, you know, and not understanding that we have a work to do once we get there. And that work's going to increase, you know, in you know, size and intensity and so forth. But we'll be able to handle the load that Yahweh has placed on us at that time. And the sights that we're going to see and the traveling that we're going to do, you know, it's going to far outweigh anything that you could post on Facebook, you know. You know, it's going to far outweigh any of those things. And that's going to be eternal without end. But Exodus chapter 19, verse 6, you can write that down too for your notes. Yahweh talks about, you know, making us a kingdom of priests and a holy generation if we will keep his laws. If we will keep his laws. And then, so it's the end result of us keeping his laws, but also coupled in with us being called out in this last generation, because this is not offered to everybody. You know, this seventh era right now is the era that is going to be, we're the last, but the last that's going to be first, and the first to receive the power of one of these things, resurrecting the dead. And that's something that only a few are going to receive, and we're going to be able to talk about that for years. You know, how you resurrected the dead, how you saw such and such, and you sat down and you talked with sister such and such, and brother such and such, you know, and king this person and that person. And you sat down and you taught them the laws of Yahweh, and you brought them up to speed with what the house of Yahweh has been given, the seals that were open, remember, and revealed to us in this last time, these last days, and it all being made clear and perfect, because the prophets, remember, they had bits and pieces of it, but it was given to us in these last days because we have a high priest who qualified to open the seals after Daniel was told to shut it up, right? So there's a lot that's being built up within you right now. There's a lot that's that a potential that you have in the work of Yahweh. Don't allow your mind to be drugged down into the daily cares of this life. Music, movies, entertainment, you know, it's all foolishness, you know, and it's all going to have its place one of these days in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone. But you, praise Yahweh, you will have your place in the kingdom which will bring light forever if you will hold fast and buckle down, endure to the end, and train to be a part of this great priesthood that will bring life forevermore. If you'll all please stand. I'd like to turn it over to the great Kahan, Benjamin Hawkins.
Shabbat shalom, saints of Yahweh. You may be seated. May the peace of Yahweh be with each and every one of you. Speaking of the lake of fire, back up from Laredo, whew, it's already 108 degrees down there. It wasn't even May yet when it was 108. Whew. Okay, so, by the way, I forgot to mention last time I was here, I'm going to show you this book again, this purple book, the new Book of Israel, the 13th part 2. That's a beautiful book. Very beautiful, yes. You know, the first sermon in it was from 7613, and y'all are familiar with that number. What's amazing about this book is the very last chapter in the book, chapter 23, let me zoom out here, is, is from 12:21-13, because remember, they start the new book, in January, and then the second part starts in the first sermon in July, and it ends in December. But the last sermon that pastor gave that year was 12:21-13, and he talked about how actually 12:28, he talked about the base on the moon. Remember that? And that's when the thing came out about 7613. And the next week, the missionary team spoke, and we spoke about the face on the moon in 7613. And that ended the book. Now, that is simply amazing that it began with 7613 and it ended with 7613. It's just amazing the things that Yahweh shows us, the true miracles that Yahweh performs. Now, that's not what I'm going to talk to you about today, but Pastor wanted me to bring you a little information about this bombshell here. American Latinos are leaving the Catholic churches in droves. That may be a Catholic compound they're leaving right there with a barbed wire fence, one of their compounds they have. We live in a feast ground. They live on compounds. But let me read this to you. Let me get my glasses here. Now, as you know, Latinos are Mexicans and people in Central America and South America, and like in Argentina where we went, the missionary team went, where Pope Francis is from. Let me read you a couple things here. It says, more Hispanics are leaving Catholic Church. This is from Reuters. A growing number of U.S. Hispanics are turning away from the Roman Catholic religion of their youth and now identify themselves as Protestant, which, as we know, is a protesting Catholic. or unaffiliated with any church, according to a survey. Catholics represented 55% of U.S. Hispanics in 2013, which is a drop from 67%. Notice that. In 1 year, they went down 12 percentage points. About 16% of Hispanics are evangelical Protestants, up from 12% 3 years earlier, and 18% are unaffiliated, up from 10%. Three-quarters of those interviewed said they were raised Catholic, which a lot of us were. I was raised in the Roman Catholic Church as well. And it says, they left their childhood, they gradually drifted away, while 31% said they found a congregation that helps its members more. Now, he goes on to say, religious scholars said the shift could serve as something of a warning to the U.S. Catholic leaders who have relied on the growing Hispanic population to fill pews and collection plates. As you all remember, if you were in the Catholic Church, the moon plate that went under your nose, you know, as you were sitting there, you know, at least three or four times. Sometimes if they didn't put anything on it, they'd keep sticking it under there until you felt guilty enough. I know me being a thief, I just wanted to take money off it. But at the time, not now, but at that time. It said, go on to say here that, now this is really interesting what's being said here. She said, Pentecostals practice emotional worship with plain common sense reading of the Bible, replacing traditionalist, often arcane, Catholic sacramental worship. That word arcane means, by the way, let me see if I can zoom in on this for you. I looked it up. This is from dictionary.com, and it means known or understood by very few, mysterious, secret. You know, when you go to a Catholic Mass and they're speaking in Latin, which is a mystery language, in fact, that's what that word Latinos means in the Mark of the Beast. Go back and read it. The word Latinos means mystery, okay? In other words, they're not getting anything out of the sermon. They don't even know what he's saying. Can you imagine? Okay, now he says, now this is really, I'm going to show you this because I want to make sure you don't think I'm making this up. Let's all read what Jose Alvarado has to say here. I don't know him, but I'm sure we'll see him soon. Jose Alvarado, 40, founder of the Chicago Latino Atheists, said he believes that many Latinos have doubts about religion, but that it was tough to, come out in a culture where the church is such a powerful force. Notice, but he uses the words to come out. And remember Revelation 18:4. Turn over there real quick. Revelation 18:4. It's interesting they would use that terminology on page 982, but it says, and I heard another voice from heaven saying, by the way, that voice from heaven, you know, do you think like it's coming through the clouds and there's some big amplifier up there and, you know, come out. You know, like you, they imagine, you know, how God speaks. Come out! You know? No? You know who that voice is? Let's hear you on 1, 2, 3. Yes, Yisroel Hawkins is that voice that's telling them, come out of her, my people. You know, Yisroel Hawkins doesn't have hatred for Catholics. I don't know where they're getting this. In fact, all of our students in the Peaceful Solution in one of the biggest Catholic strongholds down there in South Texas are all Catholic. We go to the Catholic Church, to the, what is that? The place where they keep the orphans, the orphanage down there, Sacred Heart, and we teach the nuns. The nuns say, you know, we don't have anybody to teach us. And I'm like, this is amazing. You know, don't you have a bishop in Rome? You know, someone that's an elder, a leader of the people. Does he send you sermon tapes or anything? Oh, no, we've never seen anything like that. You know, I mean, come on. I mean, is this what a father does? Is this what a leader does for his people? He doesn't even feed them? Well, that's why they're leaving in droves, because they're not getting anything. But you know what? Guess where they're coming? They have real, the people have real problems, but there's no solutions to these problems. You know how the Pope got such a strong foothold down in South America and Mexico and South America? This is from, it's called The History of the Catholic Church in Latin America and Liberation Theology by Gary Smith. Excellent read. It's about 20 pages, but it's well worth your reading. I'm just going to read a couple of things. It says the Christian era began in the New World in 1492. The Spanish introduced a different moral code. Notice that, a different moral code. Baptism, mass, new concepts of good and evil, the idea of heaven and hell, the Virgin and saints. Now, here's one of the things they did. It said the church ended human sacrifice and cannibalism. And the church replaced human sacrifice with the consumption of the host, which is the body and blood of Christ. So a new form of cannibalism, right? Christian ideas replaced native ideas in art. Cathedrals were built on the sites of old native worshiping grounds, in other words, over dead people. They have this thing about the dead. They just got to build things over them or under them or anything. It says native deities were replaced by Christian saints. Rituals and dances associated with previously existing gods were reapplied to Christian saints, and Indians became servants of the Spanish king and members of the church. Now, I'll tell you another reason why. I'm going to turn over to Isaiah 66. I'm going to show you another reason why the Latin American church loved the Pope so much. This is from Christianity Today. I'm sorry, that's not the right one. The Wall Street Journal. I'm going to show you, so you're not. Maybe you can pick that up. It says some additions to the menu. This is from 2006. The season of Lent, which began on Wednesday, brings to mind an odd request the Vatican received from South America in the 17th century. The faithful sought permission to eat capybaras. Here's a picture of the capybara here. The fish was declared a fish by the Roman Catholic Church. Now, does that look like a fish, children? See, but yes, it must be. He's got webbed feet, right? So he must be a fish, and he lives by the water, so he's got to be a fish, right? No, exactly. Now, it says the faithful sought permission to eat capybaras on Fridays during the 6 weeks before Easter, when Catholics are supposed to avoid the meat of birds and mammals. And it goes on to say, technically, capybaras are mammals, the largest member of the rodent family. Does that ring any bells? You know, the ones that are eating the rodents, teaching people to eat rodents and pigs? Because it's the largest member of the rodent family. Read Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14. It says, now notice, it says, there's a persistent rumor. It says, at various times and places, Lenten exceptions have reportedly been made for beavers. You can eat beaver during Lent. Puffins, you know, those like the Toucan Sam looking thing with the various colors on his beak. And also it says in Michigan, muskrats have been proclaimed to be okay to eat during Lent. Now listen to what a bishop said about that. When a bishop was asked about this in the Catholic Church, he replied that anybody bold enough to eat muskrat already is doing penance worthy of the greatest saint. Okay, now it goes on to say, in Mexico, listen to this. People in Mexico are a lot smarter than they think they are. It says, in Mexico, conservationists are pleading with Rome to declare the meat of sea turtles, okay, which is a very popular soup ingredient, that it shouldn't be on the Lent menu, even though the flesh of reptiles and other cold-blooded animals have generally been allowed, like the iguana, it says. And so they talk about, instead of having Easter egg hunts, we're going to have Easter ig hunts, like iguana egg hunts, I guess. Now, you know, the Catholic Church has nothing to offer, okay? The people are leaving because there's no substance to what they offer. There's no righteousness. And that's what the people are craving. They have problems and they need solutions to these problems. And the Peaceful Solution Character Education Program has the answers, does it not? You know, I remember in the church, before I close here, I remember in the church, you used to dip our hands in holy water every Sunday. And, you know, we'd all put our hand in there and, you know, we used to splash each other with it playing around. But I had to dig in my archives, in my recipe file, and I found the recipe for holy water. Let me show you what it is. Holy water. Take tap water loaded with feces, urine, hormones, and pharmaceuticals to boil the hell out of it. And with that, if you'd all please stand, it's been a pleasure speaking with the saints of Yahweh. And at this time, I'd like to introduce you the great Kohan Ilya Hawkins.
Shalom, everyone. You may all be seated. You know, the work of Yahweh is forever growing, and we see this world falling apart. This Babylon has fallen, most definitely. We see all of the work of Yahweh taking place. We see it growing leaps and bounds. Some of us may not see it as much as others, but it is growing. And if you want to see this work grow even more, get involved more. The more you're involved, the more you'll see this work grow. But if you remember, 7 years ago, almost 7 years ago, it'll be 7 years ago this October, we started facing some difficulties, of course, and I want to kind of bring these to your mind. You know, if you can remember sites like this, where we had, let me zoom out. To us, it's a beautiful site. And if you can remember sites like this, many of us, I'm sure, remember that day. We remember being there at the courthouse, and it would be honest to say that our stomachs were turning, you know, but we knew the work would go through. And then we had pictures like this. Now, if you remember, Pastor brought out many years ago that within 7 years, a person can change their DNA, completely change it. Now, many people back in those days may have been worried about what was going to be said, what was going to be done. They may not have been sure what, if the house of Yahweh was what they thought it was to begin with. And many people ran. Many people's spines were maybe not as strong as they should have been. And it came from not studying, not applying, or maybe not even being called at that time. Because we've always taught in the house of Yahweh that we're going on to perfection. That's always been the goal, is to overcome sin, to prepare ourselves to become teachers and teachers of righteousness. And we've been doing that for many years. We lift up the children because even at 12 years of age, Yeshua Messiah was sitting in the precincts and he was teaching the priests. He was astounding the priest's mind. They were blown away by the knowledge of this young man. And we have that in the house of Yahweh these days. The young men, the young women, when they go out into the world, the teachers are amazed at what these young men and the young women have had to say. They're blown away by the way they conduct themselves. And we're truly blessed here in the house of Yahweh to be able to not only train ourselves, but to train up this administration, to watch it grow. But remember back, you know, 6.5 years ago, or, you know, right around that time, because it really started in October of 2007 with a false accusation toward a priest that was made. And of course, we pray continually for his release, knowing that he is only doing the part of the work of Yahweh that he was assigned to do. And he's doing it with all of his heart, soul, and might. Praise Yahweh. I want to take you back to remember some of the things Pastor has said over the years. If you read the Mark of the Beast books, you will see that Pastor was bringing out about HIV and STDs before they started consuming our world as we see them today. Many years ago, he brought out these things. During the feast, we showed an article, a news article, a news clip, and it was concerning that Israel was planning to build a Jewish temple near the Dome of the Rock, of course. And in that article, this is what was said. You can actually get this printout if you like. It's from PressTV.com. and it's from April the 12th of 2014. And it said that Palestinian activists say the model of the so-called third Jewish temple has a big hall and can accommodate hundreds of visitors each day. Israel authorities hoped the project could attract tens of thousands of local and foreign tourists every year. Now that sounds righteous, doesn't it? There's no doubt they'll be selling turtle doves and trying to make money off the people as they come in. I want to read to you out of the book of Yisrael. This is the ninth book of Yisrael, part one, a sermon pastor gave May the 16th of 2009. Now, this remembers 2009. This article came out 2014. Pastor says, speaking of Netanyahu, and I'll just read from this point. It says, Netanyahu urges Pope to condemn Iran's threats. Pastor says, well, in the background here, we can see that Israel is deathly afraid of what Iran has produced and intends to use because their attitudes, their threats, are that they want to wipe Israel off the map and they want to carry that out. Now, at the same time, if you'll just pay attention to what Scripture shows in dividing the land for gain. At this point, Pastor is seeing something he wants us to see. This man, which was called forth from the womb, which was formed by Yahweh himself, sees the end result of what's taking place. And he's trying to get this over for us to see. But he says that it's trying to divide the land for gain. It says the Pope has a mission that he wants to perform to bring about a price tag that will actually bring money from the tourist, not to Israel, but to Rome. And that's what he's doing there. His scheme has been for years to gain these spots where the tourists come and have full control over them tax-free. He doesn't want to pay taxes on the money that they get from these sites. The Vatican is kind of a worn-out tourist trap right now. Very few people go there. Everybody's seen it, and who wants to see more? You know, a bunch of naked gods standing around buildings made out of rocks and stones. Carrying on down to the bottom of verse 6, he says, when will they get their way? Which Scripture shows they will eventually get their way. It won't bring peace, but that's not what they're wanting anyway. What they're actually trying to achieve is money. And if you'll look behind the scenes, you'll see this and what they're trying to do. Their emphasis is on money and the amount of tourists that come or that are going to come once Israel is opened up again. Pastor brought out, literally sees this taking place, this plan that the Pope is trying to bring forth, this gain for money, not for righteousness, not for peace. Of course, building a temple beside the Dome of the Rock is not going to bring peace. It's never going to bring peace. Man will eventually destroy both of them. But we see Pastor seeing a plan, seeing something that he's trying to get across to us. I want to read you something out of the parenting manual. It's on page H. It's actually part of the introductory. And it says, why start with character education? He starts out by saying, have you ever tried to shape a piece of clay that is dried? It's frustrating, disappointing, and a futile effort. The ordinary person faced with this challenge would give up in frustration and throw it away, or wet it and try to make it usable. We can compare this analogy to our children. And once again, who here is a child? Raise your hand if you're a child in the house of Yahweh. Everyone sitting in this building should be a child of the house of Yahweh. Praise Yahweh. If you have questions about that, go back and read Romans chapter 8 about the revealing of the sons and daughters of Yahweh. The whole universe is yearning for that at this time. But we're talking about sons and daughters here, and it says if we neglect to teach character education at the earliest age possible, it is much like leaving the clay out to dry. After our child's character has formed by the age of 3, when it begins to teach morals, that could have been taught before they were born. But we know here in the house of Yahweh, we teach children from within the womb. We know that. It's been a proven scientific fact that children learn from within the womb. Many parents here, very diligent mothers, they start a very vigorous training program for their children before they ever leave the womb. And that is taken very seriously. And if you remember, and you can write this down for your notes, in chapter 49 of Isaiah, of course, pastor was called forth from the womb. Trained like a polished shaft, Yahweh said. Turn over to Isaiah on page 559. Isaiah, really quickly, we have a few scriptures. Isaiah chapter 45 and verse 9. It's found on page 559. It says, "Woe to him who strives with his maker. Let the potsherds strive with the potsherds." And now those are pieces of clay, broken off pieces of clay. "Now let them strive with the earth. Will the clay say to him who forms it, 'What are you making?' Or will your handwork say, 'He has no hands'? Woe to him who says to his father, 'What are you begetting?' Or to his mother, 'What have you brought forth?' This is what Yahweh, the Holy One of Israel, and Israel's Maker says. Ask me about the things that are coming. Ask me about my sons or daughters, or the works of my hands, which I have given command." Now, who has he given command to do this work in these last days? Israel Hawkins, the one sent. When Yahweh formed pastor from the womb, remember when Samuel went to replace Saul and he seen this man and he just looked like a leader? And Yahweh told him, "That's not how I see a man." Yahweh doesn't see pastor for what he is on the outside, even though he, to all of us, is very beautiful in sight. And it's because of his character. His character is what is beautiful to us. And that's what is beautiful to Yahweh. So Yahweh formed this man. If we have questions, we should ask, how is it that I can be a part of this work, and how can I get this work done? It's never something we should say, "Well, Israel, I can't work. I can't do this unless you tell me what the end result is." No, you should ask, how can I be a part of this and play our role in getting this done? And when we play our role, praise Yahweh. Because we can't see what he sees. It's not given to us to see that until we all come together and this work starts taking shape, and then we see it. We see it in the news. We see it in the works taking place. We see all of these things taking place. But once again, look over to Isaiah 43 real quick. Isaiah 43 and verse 1. It says, "But now this is what Yahweh says, who created you, O Jacob, and he formed you, O Israel. Fear not, for I have redeemed you. I have called you by your name. You are mine." Notice, Yahweh tells pastor, "Fear not." And there's one thing for sure, when pastor was arrested years ago, he showed no fear. He fulfilled everything that was asked of him. He showed no arrogance. He complied with what Yahweh asked him to do. If we strive, praise Yahweh, if we strive to become like pastor, if we ask of the one sent, what is it that we can do to be a part of this work? We fall in the category of we don't have to fear. We fall underneath that shadow of protection that starts with the one sent and it domes over. And everyone that starts underneath that head, just as a body, it shields. And that protection truly comes from following the one sent. But if we look back at the one sent and say, "What are you trying to do? Who do you think you are to get these jobs done?" Of course, we remove ourselves from the one sent. I have a short video I want to show. It's only about 4 minutes long. And remember, in 7 years, you can change the DNA of someone. 7 years ago, many people ran from the house of Yahweh, fearing arrest, even though there was no reason to run. We had committed no crime. I want to show you a short video of what recently took place at the peace conference. If we could play the video. Now, honestly, consider this. How many people 7 years ago seen this coming? Okay, pastor has told us nuclear war is very close. We must take every word he says very seriously. Lay down our very lives to get this work done. May Yahweh bless each and every one of you, and I'll now turn it over to the great God for closing prayer.